From Peoria Public Radio, this is Out and About. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Suzette Boulay with Arts Partners of Central Illinois, here with Blake Stubbs. He's one of three directors for, relatively speaking, three one-act plays coming up at Cornstalk Theater. Performances are next Thursday through Sunday. Blake, so good to have you back again.
It's good to be back. It's been a while. Too long, I should say. Too long.
Now, one of the missions of the Winter Playhouse is to not only present different material, but also to train new talent, new actors, new directors, new technicians. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what this production is accomplishing. You've got three one-act plays in the evening and three new directors. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Certainly. Well, myself, this is my first time directing on any Cornstalk stage, really actually directing in Peoria. I have a sketch comedy background from my college years, you know, actor, director, video guy. We did everything back then. But this time it's kind of nice to just be able to sit in one chair for the production that I'm in charge of and really focus. And in my case, I think I really connect with the material just like the other two directors who are Leanne Leese and Gary Hale. Leanne Leese will be directing a one-act by Elaine May entitled George is Dead, and Gary Hale is directing a one-act by Woody Allen, which I'm also in, so that's fun because I get to switch hats a little bit. So the cool thing about this is that it's three known authors, but three brand new directors. And just to talk up our cast a little bit, I mean, we have a great group of veteran actors with a couple of first-timers. So there's a little bit of everything I think that the Winter Playhouse mission encompasses. I think it's all going to be on stage when we hit next Thursday.
And talk about your particular section, The Talking Cure by Ethan Coen.
Ethan Coen, yeah.
And it's called Mordantly Funny. What's that all about?
Well, The Talking Cure is one of those where I look at it. Now, these are all comedies. All three one-acts are comedies in their own way. Some a little darker than others. Some are a little outrageously funnier, like farcical comedy type stuff. In the case of The Talking Cure, you have a guy by the name of Larry. Larry is in an institution. He is going through therapy. It's just Larry and his therapist. Larry doesn't really see a reason for him to be in there. There is a reason that he's, you know, in an institution seeking rehabilitation. But why he's in this therapy trying to be diagnosed with something is sort of just a waste of his time. And as the audience sees through four different sessions with Larry, and they're relatively short. I mean, it's a one-act play. But to see four different unique sessions with Larry, you get a better sense of what he's like as a person. And as a director, the way I read the play is I want to answer the question of why Larry is the way Larry is. Conveniently, Ethan Coen has provided me with a fifth sequence within that one act that visits a young married couple. The wife is very much pregnant, and they are having friends, over for dinner, and an argument sort of erupts. And so you get to see sort of, and in my 20s, I noticed this more and more, like if I'm engaging in a conversation or, you know, have a little argument with someone or something like that, I see parts of mom and I see parts of dad. And you start to really get a better sense of who you are. You know, they say you go to college to figure out who you are. But when you're really in your late 20s and you're in the professional world and you're really starting to become who you're going to be for the rest of your life, you sort of notice how you got to be the way you are, how you became that way. And that is really why I loved Coen's short script. You know, I mean, most people think of Ethan Coen and they think the Coen brothers, which he is part of. But also he writes, you know, longer films, or he's written plays and things like that. But this is more of a concise, condensed little musing, in a way, of what he thinks it means to be growing up and becoming who you are and realizing where you came from and how you got to be the way you are. I want to answer the why. That's, as a director, that's my goal. And I hope that my actors, watching them the other night, they've started to hit it. They've noticed. So
now, this is an evening of three discrete one acts.
Yes.
But are there thematic connections that tie them all together?
Very much so. As I kind of mentioned with The Talking Cure, there's that, without saying the word, family. Family is probably the overarching theme of all three one acts in different ways. There's a dysfunctional family. There's the impact family has on the individual. There's also not blood family, but the way that some people cling to the image of family, either through friends or acquaintances or something, that during a time of grief, that they're going to need, you know, that person that becomes that family, like a latent family or somebody that they just haven't talked to in a long time. And it may just come at the worst possible time, you know, things like that. That's more or less what these three things are addressing, is the issue of family or the connection to family, but sometimes not in the way that you would immediately think. I mean, it's not one of those plays that just says, oh, we're going to write a play about family. No, this is three unique stories, three unique sets of characters that all have their own little way of telling a story about family in some way.
I've always liked the why of a title. Why is it titled The Talking Cure? And isn't there a clue somewhere
there
in the script?
Very much is, yes. And it has to do, I mean, it has to do with sort of the method by which Larry is seeking help. Or I shouldn't be saying, should be saying given help. I don't know that he's necessarily seeking help, but the way that he's given help. The Talking Cure, in my case, the title is very specifically mentioned within. In the case of George is Dead, I think the title kind of says it all. George is dead. But from there, that's just sort of the impetus would be the word for the rest of the play. I mean, George is already dead. But there's from there on, you know, premise established. Now let's tell the story. In the case of Honeymoon Motel, I will just say that it takes place in a hotel or motel. Sorry, Honeymoon Motel. I made that mistake first night of rehearsals. I said hotel. Then I looked at the script and I go, nah, Woody Allen would write about a motel, not a hotel. So, but yes, it takes place in a motel.
Now, one of the challenges of this production, of course, is you have the three pieces with three different directors.
Correct.
But you all have to tell it in the same space.
Right.
So did the three of you collaborate? Did you come up with sort of a common set that you would all use? Did you coordinate your tech in that respect?
Yes. Well, interestingly enough, when this show was put on in New York, it only had one director, one key director, you know, who oversaw all three individual one acts. We have three directors, but we all wanted to be able to make the vision real for each individual story in our own way. I will openly admit we do share some set pieces. Things do get moved around. Some things may never actually leave the stage. Other things will come in to sort of, you're going to see, I think, more and more come onto the stage as the show goes on. That's probably the best way to phrase it, is that in order to make this sort of a nice flow between act to act to act, I think it's easier to add things. And we all kind of saw that in our scripts. Like, you go from an institution to like a dining room area to a larger living room area to then finally a full-on motel room that has to hold 10 characters. So it's one of those things where it was pretty easy, I think, given the way that it's structured in the script to accommodate, but while also not compromising what we wanted to put out there or what we wanted to help the audience, you know, in creating the scene. Because, I mean, I'm one of those people who I've done improv comedy before. So, like, for me, the scene is whatever I pantomime. But in the case of theater, you do need to give them some tangibles. They need to be able to see things, and actors should interact with things. And we went, I would say, without building a massive set like you would see, like, say, for a Neil Simon play. We definitely did. We have things out there. There are, you know, these are full-on scenes in a set-piece environment. But don't expect something super elaborate, because these are three one acts that have to go from one to the other very quickly. And I think we've managed to accommodate that quite easily.
And I would think that would also be a logistical challenge in the rehearsal process, because mm-hmm. you have three directors with three different casts.
Yes.
And the rehearsal space in the Winter Playhouse, yeah, it can be kind of limited.
It can be, yeah. And we also, the thing about Cornstalk, and this is a great thing for Cornstalk, is there's always something going on in the Winter Playhouse. I mean, you have the theater, which is what typically the audience first interacts with. But then downstairs, you have two rehearsal rooms, one larger than the other. While we were rehearsing, The Graduate had the theater. They just closed. So we moved in and moved upstairs. But keep in mind, there's also there's two extra shows on top of what had just left. So there's three people trying to share the space of three, I guess, unique rooms. But then there's also Cornstalk for Kids is rehearsing a Seussical. So some nights, the Winter Playhouse would be very packed. It was never a problem. It's just one of those things where you think, wow, you know, that building's really buzzing. And and it was. I mean, it is. Every night it is. So I think that we were able to stagger rehearsals enough, accommodate schedules, because some actors are in multiple of these one acts. In fact, one actor, two actors technically, I think, are in all three right now. And I'm also in one while also directing. And yeah, so we're able to keep it pretty tight.
What's the biggest surprise for you as a first-time director? What did you learn going through this process that was interesting to you?
Interesting to me. Well, it's weird because I've had a very strong tech background, especially with Cornstalk. I was their technical director for 2 years, and I've worked on a slew of shows, even when I wasn't working there, just volunteering. And I've kind of always had this, well, you just get the script and you put on the show. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I've been through the motions, but I've gone from doing the tech to being on stage to now sitting in the director's chair and having to manage everything. And I think that it's one of those where I'm in that self-evaluative stage because we're close to opening. And I'm like, you know, next time I do this, I'm going to be a little tighter on the organization of rehearsal times. It'll be a little easier because we won't be staggered with two other shows, most likely. But just one of those things where the biggest surprise to me is making sure that I utilize time for rehearsal. The most, you know, when I have actors, especially if they're in something else at the same time, which can happen in especially in Peoria, because we have a very vibrant community theater, you know, arena to participate in. You have Peoria Players, Eastlake Theater, Cornstalk. There's also the Barn. You know, you can travel a little bit to do theater around here, which is excellent for the arts. But at the same time, I want to make sure that if someone walks in to rehearse with me, I get the most out of them in the quickest amount of time. Because I know that we may need extra time to work on something that just didn't go well the first couple times we've run it, or one of those things where I'm like, okay, yeah, we've been trying it this way, but then try it this way. And sometimes that is a whole scene. So that may take another 15, 20 minutes just to get through it and then evaluate it. And I think as a director, that's where I've managed to learn just by doing. I mean, it's kind of hard to just say you can be taught that. You know, everybody says, oh, make the best of your actor's time, but actually putting that in practice, I think, is a skill that you have to learn just by doing. It's not something you can easily plan for. So that's certainly come the next time. I'm going to be ever vigilant about that and make sure that I don't waste time in the rehearsal space.
Blake Stubbs directs Talking Cure, one of three 1X, coming up at Cornstalk Theater. The production runs next week with performances Thursday through Sunday at the Winter Playhouse. Blake, break a leg.
Thank you very much.
And Nathan, from now through December 20th, the Contemporary Arts Center features the work of four prominent Peoria area artists: Susan Carson, Carol Quell, Linda Verkler, and Jacqueline Willis. From painting and sculpture to mixed media, the works of these talented female artists are sure to inspire in their contemporary elegance and style.
And since we're on the subject of theater, two other productions are on stage this weekend. Bradley University opens Big Love. It's a modern-day retelling of the oldest play known in the Western world. ICC Theater is also continuing its production of Dead Man's Cell Phone this weekend.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Stephanie Sobey. If you'd like to learn more about Peoria Public Radio, visit us on the web at peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.